Hi guys, I'm Becca Otis from Five Lines Pottery, and I'm located in Van.
And I'm Ryan Durbin from RD Ceramics, located in Highland Heights, Kentucky.
And welcome to Wheel Talk.
I have gotten car. I like remember times when my parents had to pull off on the side of the road for me to throw up out of the van.
Oh, yeah.
When I was six, five, six, three, yeah. Two. Like, forever in my life. And I feel like such a little kid sometimes when I'm like, yeah, I can't go to the airport without getting Dramamine.
No, I can't. It's not an option. It's not an option.
I drive all of our cars whenever I'm with friends. I drive.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ryan's car.
I'm like, fly here so we can drive to Encica because I know you're going to drive the whole way. So I don't care.
Well, okay, so funny story, and I have no shame in, like, telling this on the podcast. So last Encica in Cincinnati, I have the type of stomach that doesn't matter. Like, I could eat everything I'm supposed to eat, and for some reason it just decides to do a few black flips. Like, it's like, okay, I guess we're going to...
Cool.
We're gonna do this. And I don't have like a real, I don't have a real say in it. And so last year at Encica, went to the show at the zoo. It was amazing. And I was fine. We call an Uber to like go back to the hotel because I'm gonna, you know, head to the airport and everything. In the Uber, thank God I'm with another ceramic artist who I know and love. Her name is Lori. Lori and I are in the Uber, and I look at her and I go, Lori, I'm going to be sick. Like, and she's like, what do you mean? And I go, oh, we need to pull over. And we're in the city, you know, like it's not like country roads where you can like do that type of thing. And there was a language barrier between us and our Uber driver. Not a big deal, but it was like, sir, I need you to see that McDonald's. Like, I need you to go into that McDonald's.
She weren't on the interstate, I guess.
I don't know where we were.
Yeah.
But he was like, no, that's not where your stop is. And I was like, sir, I'm going to be sick in your car. Pull over. Pull over. I think he got it, you know? So he pulls over. Thank God for Lori. She stays in the car. They, like, figure out their communication. She makes it make sense. It's all good. Not a big deal. We gave him, like, an extra $20 for the, like, whole ordeal. I got sick in the McDonald's. It was fine. Get back in the car. Go to the hotel. And I was like, okay, I am not going to get on this plane. And, like, I was so at peace with it because I'm so used to my stomach doing these like surprise like, hey, we're gonna mess shit up today. So I was like, all right, that's fine. I know enough people here in Cincinnati. I'll find somebody else to stay with for a night. I'm gonna miss my flight. No big deal. Like
you were prepared.
I was like, this is just this is what has to happen because there's no way I can get on a flight in this condition. And I don't even know what caused that condition, you know, like it's just like still a mystery, you know, but, Lori, I feel like I should shout her out. Can I shout her out? Can we do that? Okay.
Yeah.
So she's incredible. Her Instagram is LSP Porcelain. She's one of my best friends. But yeah, so Lori, thank God for her, had Pepto-Bismol. I've never never had it in my life. Never.
I have not had Pepto-Bismol in my whole life, basically, until probably 3 years ago. And I was like, what is this magic drug? Like, I'd had it, but like, why didn't my mom just feed me Pepto-Bismol through a tube? Like, I should have had Pepto-Bismol on drip. Like,
same here.
I carry it in my bag all the time now. I'm just like, oh, feeling a little rough? Swig. Like,
Pepto. Yeah, I think I drank half a bottle between the hotel and getting to the airport, which I was like, okay, I'll still go to the airport to see if my condition changes. Yeah, Pepto-Bismol saved my life.
So you did get on it as planned.
I did get on it as planned, but, like, fully did not think it was going to happen. Like, okay. It would not have happened without the Pepto. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
That's a story for Pepto right there. That's a
yeah,
good.
Yeah, seriously, right?
That is a story. I'm serious. Like, seriously.
How have we never, yeah. We've never talked about us both being belly girls.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And, like, sense typically. Right. And it's, like, not even the, like, the other stuff that goes with it, but I get so car sick and I get so motion sickness. And, like, yep. We drove to, so we drove to Florida. Me and my friends drove to Florida this year and sure. Three littles in the car. So dad's no. Like, are you too sure you want to drive my kids? And I'm like, well, not really. Like, I don't really want to be responsible for their deaths. But, yeah. But like, I tried to use that relief band that they advertise. Nothing.
What's it supposed to do? Is it like a waist thing? You put it around your waist or something?
No.
Oh,
it
no,
goes,
that's my other.
It goes on your wrist and it has like, yeah. It has, like, electrodes point. That, well, no, yeah. This one's an electrode
oh,
one, so it's,
okay.
Like,
I have one that's, like, a pressure point.
Yeah, this one's, like, an electrode thingy where it's, should I turn that light off? I should probably turn that light off.
Or tilt your screen
where,
or something.
Well, if I tilt my screen, yeah. And it, like, shocks you almost every, yeah. Like,
is that meant seconds. To just be a distracting thing? So it keeps your mind off of it, or is there actually maybe. Some science behind electrode shocking?
I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
Because the pressure maybe. Point thing just sounds like a distracting thing, yeah. or you're supposed to fidget with it or something.
I got that for, like, a cruise ship because, you know, pretty much anything that moves, it's going to make me sick. So I got it for a cruise ship, and they look like sweatbands. Like, it looks like you're just, like, wearing sweatbands mm-hmm. on your wrist.
Yeah.
And luckily, I think because the cruise ship is just so big, like, it didn't really, like, I was fine. So I didn't need
to I don't get sick on cruise ships.
Time. Yeah. Yeah. So that was fine. But, like, anything else, not like I'm trying to go on boats because of, you know, sensitive belly issues. But yeah, I don't mess around with anything smaller than a cruise ship, which sounds yeah. ridiculous to say out loud. But yeah, I don't want to go sailing. I don't want to go on a, I'm not going on your little canoe. Like, no. Nope. Count me out.
Canoe.
Also, I tried off-brand Dramamine. I tried off-brand Dramamine, like Meyer's brand. Awful. Doesn't work.
Yeah. Give me, I want that fluorescent pink Pepto-Bismol. I want that drowsy Dramamine. Like, give me.
It has to taste like, it has to taste like you're
shit.
Swallowing.
I don't want that holistic it, shit. I don't. Yeah.
Yeah, it has to taste like you're swallowing the most awful, uh-huh. sourest, like, mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody's ever had Dramamine, but it's the worst
like a tablet,
thing
right?
on the planet. Yeah.
The dissolving
yeah.
tablet, sort of like
yeah.
a Claritin back in the day.
Yeah.
The ones I
well,
have,
you don't, you swallow.
I swallow
But they
them.
Still taste terrible.
They do. Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's how I know it's working. Like, because here's the, and I will say, I have tried ginger and ginger chews and peppermint. Like, I've tried the line of, like, homeopathy, organic, this, safe for babies. No, give me the toxic shit that works. That's what I want. Thank you.
Like, I'm a Dramamine baby through and through.
Yeah.
Like,
same.
I'm fine.
If they made
most,
if they made
for the most
t-shirts,
part.
I would buy one. Like
I'll make us full t-shirts for Inseca that say Dramamine baby through and through.
Wait, I have a confession. I'm not going this year.
God damn
I'm
it.
So sorry. Because I
well,
have
fine.
So many other flights that I just like
she's got other commitments.
I was like making myself physically ill thinking about getting on one more flight. Like I just and the other ones are for weddings. I feel
I
can't miss them. They're my best friends.
Yeah.
Are you part of the wedding party?
And two of them, yes.
Okay, hey, that's enough pain. That. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I feel sorry for all the women that are in wedding parties because all the expectations are nuts.
It's true.
Yeah.
And the money.
Friends. I'm not going to say any more on this topic in case they listen. No, they're great. I love them. I'm so happy to celebrate their love. But
here's the thing. Yeah, here's the thing. I love my friends too, and you could be the most lovely human being in the world. That does not negate the fact that being in a wedding party and paying hundreds and thousands of dollars to be in it is kind of a pain. And you know what? You do it because you love them, and mm-hmm. they do it for you because they love you, and mm-hmm. that's just the cycle mm-hmm. that has to go along with the world.
I'm eloping. First off, I'm single, but also, like, when I'm not single, I'm eloping. I'm not doing, because watching everybody plan, like, it's three different weddings that I have this year. Watching all of them plan it simultaneously, I'm like, y'all are nuts. You guys are insane. Like, why are you actively putting yourself through this? This is miserable.
Ryan helped plan his wedding.
I was very involved. I was, yeah. It was probably like a 50-50, planning session with Rachel and I. So.
How many people did you have invited to your wedding?
225 maybe?
Holy shit.
Holy shit.
That's so many. That's a lot of people.
Well, it's one of those things where you have
Catholic. It was a Catholic wedding.
Yeah, both our families are from Louisville. We had it in Louisville. You have the family, okay. You have the family friends, all that kind of shit. So.
See, and that's the thing with weddings. I just feel like they do become
it's a family
less about,
party. It's not a
yeah. They become less about you and your, you know, significant other, and about like your parents' best friend from college that they don't even talk to anymore. Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I just
it
I don't
can
get
be
that.
For sure.
Yeah,
and then I've probably not seen most of those people since the wedding.
Yeah, see, that's weird. I think that's weird.
Or unless a family member dies or something, and then you see them, but
yeah,
tragic. Yeah, I'm not, I don't, look, I mean, I should probably focus on finding somebody before talking about, like, what I'm going to do in the future, but I'm not doing it. I'm not doing the ceremony. I'm not doing any, like, I want to go on a vacation with me and my significant other and call it a day.
I would be fine with a party in the park, potluck edition.
Okay, that sounds nice. Yeah.
I'd be fine with that. Like,
can you get intoxicated in parks? Does it depend
sure
on the
can.
Park?
Sure can. I think you can rent out parks. Yeah.
Oh, like a little pavilion type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Sounds lovely.
Yeah.
It sounds affordable too.
Yeah.
It does sound affordable. And what would be even better is if you made a list of food that you'd want
and then
been like, okay. Yeah, here's our list. Google Sheets it. Like,
yep. Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Sign up genius.
Yeah.
And assign your name to your thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And only invite the people that know how to cook for the food portion. Like,
okay, that. So I'm in the restaurant industry. So that I feel like I would be so well taken care of just because. Like, I don't cook, but I know a lot of people who do, so.
Yeah.
There you go. Got the connections.
Yeah, I do. But that kind of segues sort of into, like, what we're going to talk about, I feel like.
Yeah, I think this will be a little different because, first, do you want to introduce yourself? And
yeah,
then we
let's
can
do that.
Go from there.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Now that we all know your body functions.
And where are you?
Right. Who am I? That's such a loaded question. Hi. I'm M. Stevens. I live in Denver, Colorado currently. And I'm the artist behind Pazful Designs, which is my art company. So, yeah. Is that who I am?
I missed the very first part. Do you like to be called M or Paz or what?
Or Emily.
Definitely not Emily. But I, like, don't really, I don't ever correct
or Pays, I guess. You said Paysville, so Pays.
Pazful.
Pazful.
Yeah.
Pazful.
So that is a nickname I picked up when I was in high school. And now I am significantly older, and it's followed me throughout my life. So I would say, like, the ratio is probably, like, 90% of the people in my life and friends in my life call me Paz. But then, like, professionally, when I, like, introduce myself, I'm like, oh, I'm M. But, yeah, like, if you're in the know, people call me Paz. But then, like, cool. A lot of the ceramic community call me M. So it's a real, I never know what to introduce myself as.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, go on.
Oh, I was going to say, you guys can call me whatever.
Okay. Just not Emily, it sounds like.
Just not Emily. Yeah, no, I've never been an Emily.
Okay.
There's like 2 to 3 people maybe in my life that I allow to call me Emily.
And who's that? Like, it's your parents, like, and your grandmother or something like that?
Yeah, my grandma. My parents call me Em. My best, and then like 2 of my best friends, they call me Emily. Yeah.
Yeah, they've kind of grandfathered in, right?
They're yes. Like,
okay, yeah, they can do that.
But truly, it's like 90-10, 85-15. But like, yeah, the ceramic world, I feel like because I tend to be more timid sometimes of like, I don't know, just call me M. Like, I don't know because
that's easy to remember than Paz or Paze or.
Yeah, it's a whole explanation too. And it's just like, sometimes I just, like, I don't want to explain that, like, I picked up this nickname when I was like 17 and now I'm in my 30s, you know? So it's just like, like, whatever.
Yeah.
When you find out.
That's interesting. Where'd that come from?
Yeah, I guess it's like when you find out the nickname, then you're in the tight circle, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Becca, what are you doing?
Oh, that's what I was going to tell you. By the way, I'm beading bracelets.
I'm wearing
not because I have
can
to.
Can you tell?
Oh, yeah. Cute.
I love those.
What'd you call them? The dingleberry ones, Becca? Is that?
Yeah.
These, I love them. I get so many compliments when I wear them, too.
I stopped making them because they're a pain.
My friend made them.
I'm beating bracelets because I had a pretty rough week as far as like attention span is concerned.
Sure.
And so that's part how I'm life. Going to be able to pay attention today. Yesterday we did a podcast with Rebecca and I almost fell asleep. Not because of her. It's just
Rebecca
Ikiskara from the Maker's Playbook.
Oh, fun. A little podcast collab.
Yeah,
kind of.
That's cool.
Yeah. So anyway, if I'm not looking at you, I'm still listening to you. Actually, I'm probably listening to you more than if I was looking at you.
That's fine.
So
I thought you were doing that 100 make 100 challenge.
100 a day.
Yeah. Okay.
I actually already did that.
Well, you did it once. Did you do it for 5 days? Like leading up to, you kind of did, right?
I did it for 3 days because I had to, come here.
Work. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So I'm in the middle of, I have a show in LA on the 3rd and the 4th. And then, but I'd already planned on coming up to Seattle. And so I was like, I need to fucking bust out some shit for these 3 days. And then when I get back, I can like glaze them and everything. So.
I would love to do that challenge, but...
You don't have to make 100 things.
You could just commit to a number and do it consistently for X number of days.
I saw Polanski. She's doing 50, which is pretty cool. I just can't, I can't settle on the thing I would make that I would feel inspired to make that many of, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I don't wheel throw.
I would just choose something that you can feel confident that it will sell eventually because we hate those pieces that you make just because on a whim or whatever and then they sit gather dust and I still have them on the bottom of my bisque shelf from 3 years ago.
That shit stresses me out. I can't, like, I hate clutter, which is ironic because I do feel like so much of pottery, it's like you just start to collect so much stuff and I hate
it. Same.
But then, like I have been slowly downsizing because of, like, right now, all of my ceramics, most of it is in two bedrooms that I have in the house. I would love to have, like, the room that I'm in right now, I would love to have as a guest room and not my shipping and photography room. I would love that with all of my heart. But I'm downsizing just for when the studio in my backyard is finished. Like, I just want to be very intentional with that space, because the plan is for me to make more pottery, but not acquire more shit. So.
Yeah, so you have to have that
is
that
very easy
line
to get
do, rid
of actually.
It.
Yeah.
That's very easy to do if you're very intentional about it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I have to, like, stop myself quite a bit when it's like, oh, well, this is free. And it's like, yeah, but do you need it? No. So it's like, who cares if it's free? Let it go to somebody else.
Oh, you're talking about, like, studio equipment and tables and shelving.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes. And, like, just the way that my brain works, like, I just want, this is my studio that I'm building, you know, and, like, mm-hmm. I know Ryan knows quite a bit about it from following along on Threads, I feel like, and maybe mm-hmm. Instagram, but, like, this is my studio that I'm building, so it's not this spare bedroom in my house that I took over, and I just want it to be done right. Like, I want to do it once, and I don't want to do it again, you know?
Be intentional,
Yeah. Like, yeah, I want a tall table so that I don't have, like, body injuries later in life, which I love that episode. Who was that guy again? I forget.
The one we just had?
Yes.
Joshua Reed.
Josh.
Yes. Yeah, that was such a great episode. Because that's
I actually didn't listen back to it because it got uploaded pretty late before it got released. And okay. I was like, I wonder how it came across, because we were talking a lot while we were kind of away from the mic, sort of, and demonstrating things. So I wonder how that came across. But,
you know, I didn't notice it, but also I'm the type that usually, like, I don't like to wear headphones typically. So for me, when I'm in my studio, I have I just put it on the loudest sound on my phone, mm-hmm. and then I'm walking around too anyways. So I'm like, eh.
And Becca was doing the play-by-play, too, so that helped, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And added some good color commentary and entertainment.
But, but I do think that's so important, like, your long-term physical health and,
being able to do this for decades rather than...
Yeah. Well, and especially, like, again, it just so happens that the other industry that I'm currently in, like, I'm a bartender and a server. And so, especially with bartending, like, I favor my right side of the body so much when I'm, like, shaking cocktails. So it's just, like, even something as cognizant as, like, okay, let's just switch it to the non-dominant side for, like, 10 drinks.
Yeah.
You know, like, something such a, like, a small little tweak can actually go so far. Because you do that little tweak once an hour, you know, like, that just helps.
And all of a sudden you're even.
Yeah.
For the all night, I guess, sudden, at least, or you're
all
not.
All of a sudden, I got two strong arms.
Yeah.
But no, so I think the main reason why I was so excited about this opportunity is because of what you shared with your end of year report. And you and I haven't talked super much about it because we're like, okay, let's just save it all for the podcast. And I will say, I, like, very loosely did mine before coming on here. Yeah, I know. I think it's going to shock a lot of people. It kind of made me a little sick, not going to lie. But I think this is great information that, like, needs to be shared, you know, so that people have more of a realistic idea, I guess. Mm-hmm. And maybe you guys can also be like, oh, girl, this is where you could be better. Which I already... think I know, but anyway.
And is there a little background that people might help people understand? How long have you been doing it? How long have you been side hustling it?
Oh, yeah.
Have you been working in community studios? Have you been doing it in your own studio for a while?
What my background is, yeah.
Yeah.
My background is I have always loved art. I actually wanted to be a painter and, like, sell my work in galleries and not be a ceramic artist. I didn't get into ceramics until after I graduated college in, when did I get into it? 2016. Excuse me. And I was, working for Lush Cosmetics as a visual merchandiser for the, like a soap company. I mean, it's way more than soap. I actually still love the company.
I think I've heard of Lush. I think Rachel's got some stuff.
It's the best.
It's got some cool stuff.
I love it. But it just, like, I kept on applying for the same job promotion to be a traveling, like, store opener, essentially, and then, like, teach the staff how to do the merchandising of the store. And after an entire year of applying for the same job, three separate occasions, after the third interview with the same human, like, the third interview, and I'm like, well, should we even do this? Like, you said no to me two times this year already.
Yeah.
So, third time, right? Strike out, right? I don't know. And so, I got the no again, and I had stayed in Austin, Texas, which I was not enjoying my life there, but I had stayed there for an entire year because of the interview process.
Jesus Christ.
So you were home, were you home based there and working for them out of Austin, Texas in an office kind of thing or?
In a store. Yeah. In a retail store.
In a store. Okay.
Yeah. And so I wanted to then become like a trainer for the company and then I would be able to travel because I really wasn't happy living in Austin. And so I figured, well, this would be a way. And again, right now at this point, I'm still not even doing art. Like, I was so burnt out after art school that, like, I was burnt out. I was lost. I didn't have, like, any confidence in my ability. And so at this point, I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to be, like, an artsy, creative human and do something else. You know, like, that was kind of...
Yeah, find a way to get your creative fix when you can, yeah, but not make it the sole... focus.
Right. And then after that third rejection, I had this like aha moment because I was alone in my car driving from Vermont to Pennsylvania by myself, found out that I didn't get this job, that I had stayed in a city I hated for an entire year. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to start my business. My first company was called Be Good Candle Company. And the whole mindset of it was this waste-free product of putting, beeswax candles that were ethically sourced and, pouring them into ceramic that was handmade. And so it's going to be this whole like waste-free product where like, okay, it's going to be a coffee mug because people can then use the coffee mug after they're done with the candle. And I just was like so jazzed about it. I'm still pretty jazzed about it. But that was the whole thing. And it was taking all of the cool stuff from Lush on how they were nice to the environment and they cared about their ingredients and all this stuff. And I was going to bring that into this company. And so I like get out of the car and I like tell my parents, who are like, oh, how was Vermont? And I'm like, rapid fire. I didn't get the job. I'm moving out of Texas. I'm going to move to Colorado. I'm going to start my own company and I'm going to do pottery and I'm going to put candles in the pottery. And so like my parents are like sick.
I'm guessing your parents are in Pennsylvania. You're from Pennsylvania area.
Yes. I'm from Pennsylvania. Grew up in Pennsylvania, went to college in Vermont. Moved to Texas after I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
Did not love it. Moved to Colorado.
Okay.
Why Colorado?
My best friend from college lived here and still lives here. And we're still best friends. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, and so my poor parents, like, I had taken one ceramic class in college, and I mean, my work sucked. Like, I took the pottery class because it was an easy grade, not because I cared about it.
Did that.
Yeah. And so it's like, here they are just thinking, like, cool, we just, like, sent her off to a pretty expensive school for 4 years, and now she's telling us that she's quitting her job, moving to Colorado, and becoming a ceramic artist, and all of the pottery that we have in this house is garbage. I mean, they didn't say that last part. That's my input, but, like, truly, like, it was shit, you know, like, all of it should be thrown away, but for sentimental reasons, now I'm kind of attached to it. But yeah, and so I just, like, had this weird gut feeling that, like, if I actually put effort into pottery, that I would be good at it. But, like, there was no proof of that. I just had that feeling inside of me. And so that was in 2016. I signed up for a community ceramic class. By class number two, I almost started crying because I couldn't get the clay centered. And I was like, well, how am I supposed to have this company if I can't even
center clay?
If I can't even center clay. And again, I had already committed and started this. Like, I had gotten, like, I got, like, the business license. I got my tax ID. And it's, like, day two of my community pottery class, and I'm about to burst into tears because I can't center the clay, which it's, like, yeah, no, duh. Of course you can't center clay. You don't know what you're doing. Like, you haven't done pottery. You took one ceramic class in college, and, like, that was it, you know?
Like, plus, it doesn't help that you have these expectations for, okay, I've got to get this business going because that's right my away. Income.
Right away.
Right.
Yeah. I wasn't one of the ones that are like, you know, I feel like there's so many people who take, like, an entire session of pottery and they're like, I could sell some of this. And it's like, yeah, you could. No, I went into it with, like, no skill. Let me start a business. Right. So luckily it's, like, kind of worked out. But yeah, so the first community class was in Texas in 2016. I moved to Denver in January of 2017, immediately picked up community classes at the Arvada Art Center, which is an incredible events center here in Arvada, Colorado, which is right next to Denver. Highly recommend it for anybody who lives in this area. If you can get into one of those classes, like, that center just has, like, a giant place in my heart. Like, it's, like, my second home. So I took wheel throwing classes there. And then I realized that I like geometric stuff and harsh lines. And I saw all the hand builders and I was like, ooh, I kind of want to do that. And so then I switched over and started doing hand building. And then the head of the ceramics department there, her name is Bibi Alexander. She's incredible. She kind of approached me and was like, hey, do you want to, like, be a studio tech here? Do you want to learn a little more? And I was like, yeah, I didn't even know that was an option. I would love to learn more.
Does it include pay?
It included free classes.
Oh,
and
okay.
So at that time, and so at that time I was paying for two different classes. I was still doing wheel throwing and I was doing hand building. And a lot of that was mostly because of the amount of work that I was producing because there's, you know, a clay limit. And I was like, well, I want to make more and I need to make more. And once I started doing it, I just couldn't stop doing it.
Right.
And so then I became a studio tech, learned how to do the kilns and whatnot. And then after a little bit of time, she's like, hey, you know, BB comes up and goes, hey, so, you know, this is an educational studio and you're making like production levels amount of work. And I'm like, yeah, you're not wrong. And so BB helped me find some co-ops here in Denver, and I went and toured a few. And that's how I found Castle Clay Artists here in Denver. And so then I became a member there. And love them. I was just visiting last week again. And so I was there for a little bit. And then the pandemic happened and I wasn't working at the restaurant, and the co-op, we were still allowed, like we voted and we were doing some, you know, different protocols so that people could still be in there making work, but everybody was safe and all that fun stuff. Because, you know, the co-op, it's a lot of people that are professional ceramic artists. Like they need,
yeah, that's their livelihood.
That's their livelihood. Yeah. And so, we just put a lot of, protocols in place. But then because I wasn't working at the restaurant, I was scrolling through my phone, and one day Kurt Hammerly on Instagram mentioned that he was possibly thinking of hiring more people.
Hey guys, we are breaking up the podcast because we want to talk about our amazing sponsor, L&L, and we have some awesome things to talk about, especially now because Inseca is rolling up soon in late March. And so Ryan is going to tell you the kilns that they have available at Inseca for a discounted price that you are available to purchase if you so please.
Yep. All right. So if you're going to be in Richmond, Virginia between March 20th and 23rd for Inseca, we'd love to see you there. They are giving away the smaller kiln of the three that they have available. So this is the E18S3. This is a 2.5 cubic foot kiln. It goes to cone 10. They're giving it away.
Yeah, make sure you sign up for the drawing there.
Yeah, so you can stop by their booth anytime. I want to say between Wednesday, Thursday, early Friday, and I think they draw it Friday afternoon. So make sure to get entered in to win that. It's a good small size kiln. The next size up, which is the most popular and actually the kiln that I got last year at Inseca, is the E23T3. That's their most popular kiln. It's a little over 6.5 cubic foot kiln going to cone 10 again. And that's a great one for if you're a studio potter or you just need something that's a good, you know, workhorse for you. You can get bisqueware and glazeware through that. And it's a great kiln. I have two of that exact same kiln body. So. And then the last one they have is the EQ28273, which is a production level kiln, is kind of how they label it. It's a 10 cubic foot kiln. And again, that goes to cone 10. So all these go to cone 10. You got different sizes available. And if you would like to get your hands on one of those and we can get you connected with L&L, you can reach out to us through Instagram or through email. If you can email us at wheeltalkpodcast@gmail.com. We will get you connected with the folks over at L&L Kilns to give you more info so you can stop by.
Yeah, and all of those also have all of the Genesis controllers too, so that's really exciting as well. So you're going to – also, if you need to look up pictures, you can go to hotkilns.com.
Yeah, thanks so much. Hope to see you at Inseca, and make sure to stop by and tell L&L we sent you. Thanks.
And so I called up BB and I was like, hey, BB, can you please write a letter of recommendation for me? And I sent a DM to Kurt and I said, hey, I'm in Denver. I want to work for you. When can I, like, let me know when your application goes live or something like that. And he was just like, oh, you can like just come up and like talk.
And just like come talk to me and work.
Yeah. But I just thought like, oh, like here's this guy who's got all these like Instagram followers and like it's going to be so stressful and like so many people are going to apply for this and it's going to be so competitive. Like I just thought all these things. And he was like, no, you can like just come up to the studio, and I had, like, a resume. I had my letter of recommendation from BB. I had some pieces of work that I was pretty proud of, and, like, I think one that I, like, thought sucked, and I, like, explained why I thought this was kind of shitty and stuff and what I would do differently. And I think that, like, Kurt and I ended up hanging out talking for, like, I don't know, 3 hours or so in his studio that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, up until him downsizing this past summer, which I believe he kind of talked about a bit on the podcast, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. I'm like,
I wasn't there.
Okay. Why?
Becca was not there.
What? Because Ryan just doesn't like me to join the Kurt podcast.
No, I just figured I would save you.
I'm kidding. It's
I'm
totally
never going to not invite Becca to a call, tune in ever again.
But
I'm just giving him a hard time.
No, up until Kurt downsizing this past summer, I worked for him for, I think, like, almost exactly 3 years.
Wow. It was that long.
Yeah,
since the pandemic, if that's when the time was.
July 2020 is when I started working for Kurt, and July of 2023 is when he downsized.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Although I have, like, work being fired in his comb, like, as we speak. He's like, you can still use the studio. I was like, okay, good. I'm going to work on getting my own studio, but I still need your comb.
While you're offering, I would love to not be in your way and just bring things, and here you go.
Yes, pretty much. So, essentially, I think I finally have, I think I've left one glaze still in his studio, and, like, every other week, he's like, hey, so, you gonna get that glaze out of here? And I'm like, yeah, eventually.
Eventually.
It's gonna happen.
Sometime.
He has a lot of glazes, so I would imagine extra glaze buckets. Yeah.
So many. I mean, like, well, and especially, like, he went from two studio spaces down to one. And mm-hmm. that man has a lot of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I get it. But I don't have a lot of space. And I anticipated my own studio being finished by now.
Building takes a long time.
It sure does.
And your timeline is not their timeline.
Nope.
Well, they gave me a quota of 45 days, and we have surpassed 45 days.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's fine. I love my contractor. I love the crew. But, like, I just, like, this past week, I am struggling running my business, having to depend on other people to fire my work. And I don't want that. I don't want that to sound ungrateful, because without them, I would be firing nothing. So I am incredibly, incredibly thankful and grateful for the friendships that I have here in Denver. But I do think, like, I feel like I have maxed out how I can grow, because so much of my time is spent coordinating, and that is not something that I am strong at or enjoy doing. But so much of my time is spent on the road and driving to different studios right now, like packing up work here. So, perfect example, what is today? Today's Wednesday. So yesterday I drove to Liz Cohen's ceramic studio. Has Liz been on here? I can't remember.
Yeah. She talked about when she was building her home studio, actually. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And she's in the not home studio.
Yeah. So she's in, like, a commercial studio right now. Huge space. Really lovely. So yesterday I picked up my Bisqueware from her studio, drove up to Kurt's studio to glaze at his studio, and then I did some plaster work at his studio since I was up there, and then I came home. But it's just, like, driving, like, from where my house is to Liz's studio to Kurt's studio back to my house. Yeah. It's a lot. And
plus, you gotta leave without a trace.
I've been to all three of those places, and it is a drive.
Oh yeah, you have been to my house.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, it's like I'm very proud of myself for making it work as long as I have. It was a lot easier when I was actually working for Kurt because I was, you know, going to his studio twice a week minimal just to work for him. So like that was easy because I could always just bring up a small load and I really didn't have to coordinate anything because it's like, oh, sweet, you're bisking your work. I'm going to put in some mugs. Like it was very effortless.
Right.
And I was not expecting how much would change once, you know, I was let go. And, you know, I don't.
And not because he's like, oh, you're no longer the priority. It's just the effort involved in getting there and back and timing.
I had zero motivation to drive 40 minutes one way. Like that, you know, and again, it's like sometimes it's 30 if it's a good day, you know, but it's like, I lacked that motivation to make it happen. And I, like, for the 3 years that I worked for Kurt, he'd always be like, homie, you gotta, like, plan things out a little bit more. Like, you gotta get on a schedule. You gotta, like, when's your next sale? When's your next sale? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, that stresses me out. I would like to maybe get to that level. And maybe when I have my own studio that I'm not driving to, like, then I'll be able to figure it out. And maybe I will. I don't even know. But, like, that was the hardest thing when I was at the co-op because you would have to, like, sign up for a kiln, like, 4 weeks in advance. And I'm like, well, I can't do that. I can't do that. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, but again, it was like a system that like worked for most of the people there. That's just not how my brain works. That's just not who I am. And yeah, I admire the people who can do that. I'm just not one of those people. So that's why when I was working for Kurt, I didn't need that motivation to drive, you know, 30, 40 minutes one way to just, because a lot of the times I'm just dropping my work off, you know, so it's like,
yeah. You kind of want to be there as long as it take, at least as long as it takes you to drive there. Otherwise, it feels like a wasted trip.
Sometimes I like don't need to be. And when you like, for me, I have that like when I was working for Kurt, I had my own business. I was working for Kurt, and I was also still working at the restaurant. So it was like my time is so valuable as it is that driving 40 minutes. In miserable traffic one way, like it was just causing a lot of like negative feelings inside of me and like a little bit of road rage. And again, it's like, cool. I am literally driving in this shitty traffic so that I can get my work fired. So again, I'm grateful. I'm thankful. It's better than the alternative, which would be zero work getting fired.
Or you'd have to risk firing it somewhere that the schedule's kind of shit or somebody else.
Well, and here's the caveat. I do cone 10 oxidation. So there's not really any other option for kilns in Denver that do cone 10 oxidation. They're all doing cone 10 reduction. Like even the co-op that I used to be a part of, cone 10 reduction. Nobody did oxidation there. Nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, it's inefficient unless you have Kurt's kiln. So.
Right.
Let's just, you know, if you're talking price point, the price point between a cone 10 reduction and a cone 10 oxidation in a Blau is negligible. Honestly, it's pretty awesome. But with like a typical gas kiln, like that I was using at the co-op, that would be like $80 difference minimum in the firing.
What about an electronic kiln?
Well, I'm so glad you bring this up. I just placed an order with Clay Kings this week. So I'm getting a Scut 12-27 in a few weeks.
12-27. Is that the short kind of wide one?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that the KM? Cone 10, right?
No. No. I am going down to cone 6. I'm going to be
Did you get the cone 10 kiln or the cone 8 kiln?
I got the cone 8 kiln. Yeah.
Okay.
So I am about to embark on a really fun transition of switching all my clays and glazes, and I am so excited.
Well, you know, you haven't gotten it yet, so I'm gonna say this, but my friend Andrew Krieger, mm-hmm. he fires the cone 10, he fires cone 10 oxidation in his L&L.
Oh, really?
Consistently. Yeah.
Yeah, I think actually, all the L&Ls go cone 11. 10, but he goes to cone 11 on there?
I think L&L does go up to cone 11 because I know Ian Childers loves his L&L kilns, and he's mm-hmm. a crystalline boy, so.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Kruger is a crystalline boy, too.
Okay, I'm not familiar with his work, but sure, yeah.
That's interesting. I've done the transition, the cone 10 to cone 6 transition, and it is interesting. It doesn't suck, not all the time.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, I've had so many people based off of the work that I make. Like, it is very colorful. It's pastel-y. It's jovial. But, I mean, so many people have been like, why are you doing cone 10?
Were you doing cone 10 because of Kurt? Because you didn't want...
No,
because he doesn't go to cone 6?
I've only ever done cone 10. So, like...
Because of the co-op. Because of the co-op.
Well, from when I took my first class in Texas, that was a cone 10 gas kiln that I was firing in.
Yeah.
So I had always done cone 10 reduction up until working for Kurt. And then working for him, he was like, well, if you like these type of colors, we could just do an oxidation firing. And I was like, what? And so I didn't have to really, like, a lot of the reduction glazes that I had were actually just able to be used in oxidation.
There's so, kind of different results, right?
Better results, to be honest. But yeah. So I just.
So I feel like this is a prime opportunity to talk about reduction and oxidation and what the difference is between the two. So, I mean, I could say it. I'm sure that I would get a few things wrong, but if. Correct me if I'm wrong, but reduction is when there's air flowing through the kiln and it is, like, moving. It's moving so your glazes literally, like, are hit with oxygen and that, like, changes the glazes. And then in oxidation, there's no air flow.
That's the...
Is that right?
It has to do with there's a... gas is typically reduction...
But you can do gas oxidation.
But you have to introduce oxygen to get the oxidation.
It has something to do with oxygen. It's got something to do with airflow. And all I know.
Go to For Fluff's Sake for the true answer.
Because maybe I shouldn't have said anything, but,
I want to say it has to do more with the carbon and, like, there's a reduction. It's a reduction in oxygen so that it has to pull things from the glazes and the clay so that it changes the colors. So if you have
I knew you would come through.
I don't know.
If you have a turquoise glaze or a copper glaze in an oxidation, it's going to be green. But in a reduction kiln, it's going to be red generally because it's got to pull certain molecules and... sciency things out of the glazes and out of the clay to change the color.
There's a difference. I know there's a difference. Based off of the feedback of truly too many potters, like I can't even name them all, I should have been doing cone 6 based off of the style I like and the colors I like and the glazes I like. I probably should have made that transition 3 years ago, truly.
At the beginning.
At the beginning. Yeah, and I just never did because, like, I would do reduction and, like, I would always struggle because it's like, oh, I feel so positive about the form that I've just made, but I feel so negative about the glaze. And so
it probably like, doesn't look the same all the way around it, right?
Well, it just it wasn't me. Like, I don't like rustic. Like, I don't.
Reduction,
you know,
is brown.
Yeah.
Reduction.
No, you can get bright copper reds in reduction, and there's a lot, I mean,
that's the only fucking color. You can't get bright yellow. You
but
can't get bright
is
orange.
Rustic.
Like,
red is kind of rustic in my book. I don't know. Like, it's like, yeah, I don't like the blues. I don't like the reds. Like, I didn't like the greens. Like, I just didn't ever feel like the glazes and reduction were my style. So for the longest time, I only did Leach White and Case Beer Black. And those were, I think, for like 2 years, truly, like until I started working for Kurt. And my whole, you know, world was opened up with pastels after I could, you know, do Cone 10 oxidation. I did Leach White, Case Beer Black, and I always say it wrong. I want to say it's a Choi Celadon. So I did those three. Those were the three glazes I used for like 2 years. Because I was
Chun?
Like,
oh. Chun Celadon?
Chun.
I could have sworn it was Choi.
There might be a Choi. I'm familiar with a Chun glazes, but
I know that Kurt has that one, but I want to say it was either Choi or Choy, and knowing me, it's probably in the John Britt High Fire glaze book,
probably,
because that is like my Bible. And now I have the mid-range one, so I'm very excited to
there you go.
Ooh, that one's a really good one. Also, my favorite glaze out of that is actually June Perry Red. And the June Perry Red base, you can add almost any color to. Fucking, that's it. That's fucking it right there.
You heard it. You heard it here. Mic drop.
You heard it here.
Okay, so what else? Let's talk about transparency about, Ryan, what you made, because we kind of tangent. We didn't really.
Yeah.
Are
so
we
she,
circling back.
Yeah. So Em reached out and was like, "Hey, I looked at your 2023 recap. I also don't do this full time.
Mm-hmm.
You blew my mind with some things and made me question some things on
what
my
I was
side.
Doing.
So I was like, we can chat about it. And why don't we chat on the podcast if you're open to it? Because I think other people will get value out of this. So that's kind of where we ended the conversation. And that's what got us here today.
I think it should be noted that for anybody that's listening for their first time, and also as a disclaimer before we get into this conversation, that Ryan works way more than anyone should. Okay, I can continue.
Well, okay, I'm.
Hey guys, we are just interrupting the program because we want to talk about one of our other sponsors, a brand new sponsor to us, Speedball Ceramics. And I'm going to let Ryan talk about a few things that are happening at NSICA, and then I'll come back and tell you what you can find there as well.
All right. So if you're going to stop by NSICA in Richmond in late March, we'd love to see you there. Speedball is going to have a booth at the vendor hall. It's booth number 208. And Becca, myself, and Erica, my studio assistant, we're going to be demoing on Thursday from 2 to 4. You'll definitely want to stop by their booth a number of times throughout the conference. Last year, they had a bunch of bats that were just piled up, and they were giving those away. So definitely hit those booths early if you're in the vendor hall, and we'd love to see you. So come by.
Yeah, they are also going to have the brand new Midfire glazes that they just came out with, like, I think only a couple months ago. And they'll also have their underglaze out as well. And what's cool about the underglaze is that they just came out with a new formulation that they announced. So that'll be exciting to kind of see how that compares to the old formulation, and just to see all the colors, and also to meet all the people at Speedball and see how lovely they are. And so you can understand why we love them so much.
Yeah, there's so many demo presenters throughout the day. They just shared the list with us recently, and it's, you know, there's like 4 to 5 people demoing each day, or maybe more than that. There's just so much going on. So definitely stop by the booth, booth 208 at NSICA. If you're not going to NSICA, you can still check out their website, speedballart.com, see what's going on over there. They've got a lot of info in there.
And they sell through Clay King, and they sell through Blick. So, yeah, it's nice to be able to buy from a regular art store, too, if you're in a big city. So, yeah, cool. Thanks, and hope you like the rest of the show.
I'm so glad that you actually said that, because that was a question on the sticky note. I'm curious, but no, here's the thing, though. No shame, right? Like, there's no shame in that. This is all part of transparency, because when I saw what you posted for your 2023 annual report, I had two reactions. One was, holy shit, that's amazing. I want to do that. Okay. That was probably reaction number one. And reaction number two, or question, was like, does he have a life? And I don't mean that.
He does.
Truly, I don't mean that like in a shady way.
Yeah, that's not
like
a degrading statement. That's just does he spend his time elsewhere besides working full time and going to the studio?
Yes. Yes. Like, do you do things with friends? I know you have a wife. Because I also, one of the things that really I feel like how you and I kind of started connecting over on Threads was you were sharing what you were making with all your markets.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, huh, like this guy's really out there, because I know he has a full-time job. I know he's married. And he's doing all of these markets. And I was just kind of like, you know, like, that's really impressive. And I still think that's really impressive. And it's
thank you.
Cool to, yeah, you're welcome. But it's cool to see you do that, because I used to do a ton of markets. And I haven't, literally, you know, the age-old, like, saying, since the pandemic. But because I had Kurt as a mentor for as long as I did, Kurt doesn't do markets. Kurt only does online. And so I started to only just do online, mostly because of the year that we were in and the year after. And then also because I was kind of like, well, this is working for him, so I should try and see if I can make it work for me. Because the other thing with the industry that I'm in and my job is, a lot of times the best money making shifts as a bartender are the same days that there are markets.
Yeah, and or you'd have to work a Friday night before you got to do a market Saturday, and then you're not in a good state to sell at a market because you were up the night before and making money.
Yeah. Well, and it's also like, you know, on a Friday, if I close down, you know, the restaurant or the bar, I'm not getting home until like 1 a.m. And then with markets, you have to be there pretty early. And also sometimes the setup is the day before.
Yeah. And depending on,
you know, sometimes you don't really get to choose what time you're setting up. Well, that setup time could be 3 to 5. Well, guess when my shift is supposed to start at the restaurant? Like, I can't work the day because the day shift ends at around 3:34, and I can't work the night because the night shift starts at 3 or 4. So
right.
I just lost an entire day of wages to go set up for 2 hours for the show that starts the next day, you know? And so, for better or worse, I kind of got in this mentality of it's not worth me doing markets. And I'm not saying this is the correct mentality. I'm just saying it is what I had.
You're comparing guaranteed money with potential money, as well as, you know, a risk of, you don't know how you're going to do at this market because you haven't done it before, or,
yes,
you know, you don't know the optimal setup. You don't know the price point you can expect. I don't know how comfortable you are with talking with people at shows and talking about your work. So
I was like, I don't think that's,
I mean,
issue.
Talking to people in general, but like, you know,
sure.
If you haven't done a ton of shows, it's kind of like, you know, there are optimal ways to talk about your stuff and get people to buy or whatever. But
right.
But yeah, it's a risk that you're, you're like, you know what? I can find other ways to make this work.
Yeah. And I mean, like, again, not to go back to, like, I sometimes get stuck of, like, okay, I'm watching this thing work for another person, so now I want to try and make it work for me. But in reality, it's kind of the opposite of what I'm always preaching on my Instagram, which is like, hey, this is my journey. Doesn't mean it's your journey. But then here I am, like, trying to copy somebody else's journey, you know? So it's like, it is kind of that weird catch 22 almost.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess I'm still struggling with figuring out. I do think I would like to do more markets this year.
Okay.
I do. Because if you see, like, I don't have that many Instagram followers in the grand scheme of, like, the bigger Instagram account, which to me means that I have so much opportunity to grow my account, either through markets and in-person shows or through other social media techniques, which I'm implementing a different plan for that. So I feel good about growing it through social media.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that there's opportunity, and I think you could probably talk about this, of, you know, the value of handing out your business card at these shows.
Yeah, I think it's we've talked about this a little bit because the shows that Becca has had done for a while, since sure. she's been in Indianapolis mostly, has been mm-hmm. a lot of non-repeat ones that she's done. Besides the farmer's market, that's a little different, I guess, but she's done a right, lot of yeah. one-off shows that have not given her time to see those customers over and over.
Okay.
But a lot of my shows that I've done have been, repeat. There's rarely a show that I'm going to do this brand year new. That I haven't already done. Or yeah. if it is one that I haven't done before, it's going to be one that is reputable. I've talked with other potters that are there, or
yeah.
I have some footing in that area, whether it's, you know, Summer Fair that's here in Cincinnati that's literally 10 minutes from me. So I already right. have a customer base here in Cincinnati because I do other shows here.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the show in Louisville that I've been trying to get into, and I've been waitlisted a few times, and I'm determined to get into that one. So it's like, that's a risk, but also I've talked to some other people that have done it. I attended it right. last year for the first time. So right. I have a sense of, like, the crowd, the area.
Yeah.
The type of pottery I would be in the midst of.
Yeah.
And also I knew some of the people that were there. So that gives me more confidence of, okay, I feel good about doing this show. It's a risk because I'm still on the fence about Louisville shows. I'm from sure. there, but I'm still like, I haven't found a good okay. results that I'm happy with there.
Yeah.
Becca's done a few there. We do the backyard craft show there every year, the last 4 years or 5 years, which is the one that we host at my parents' house
right.
since the pandemic.
Yeah.
But I don't gauge that in relation to the other ones, but it's, sure. Those are the kind of risks I'm willing to take with new shows at this point.
Yeah.
Because I have at any given year, I probably could choose between about 30 shows that I have done historically.
Yeah.
And then I can pick and choose. So I kind of have like a list of shows that are, okay, I'm definitely going to be back here
right.
next year. There's ones that, you know, of those 30, I've probably said, okay, I'm not really going to come back here. These are ones that I'm ready to like put behind me.
Right.
And those might be perfect for somebody. Not saying like you have to go to these shows if you're at this level of selling or you're new right. to selling, you have to go to these. But for me, it's not financially worth it to go to a show. And
well, and
if I've been there before and sell $600 worth at right. not a farmer's market, but like an art show.
Yeah. I think that's what is so important, though, for other artists that are listening to this episode, for them to also figure out, like, you have your threshold of what works for you, right? And I think that's great. And you know that, but like you also had to jump in the water to figure out what your threshold was.
Right.
And it's taken time. And it's
I started selling in 2016.
Yeah.
That year I sold in 3 shows. The next year I sold in 10. The year after that I sold in like 15.
Right.
And then probably 20 to maybe I maxed out at 25 one of those years. Yeah. But I've pretty much been right around that 20 mark. So like that's a lot of samples. That's a big sample size.
Right. And then the other thing. So one, I think for my own personal journey, I think I have to jump back in the water. Like I think that's what I need to do. I feel as though I might be, I don't know if this is the correct term. Like, I feel like I'm almost pretty womaning myself.
You're what? Like, pretty you know womaning yourself? Pretty Woman?
Like,
oh. Like
a, you know what I mean?
I've seen it, but I don't know what kind of, what you're.
So I'm, our, you I'm
You've myself. Seen Pretty Woman, but you haven't seen Star Wars?
Yeah.
I same.
But actually, I think I've seen Pretty Woman with Rachel, so it's.
I haven't seen Star Wars, but I have seen Pretty Woman.
There you go.
So, sorry. You guys.
Pretty Woman was the movie that we always borrowed from my neighbors and never gave back to them.
Anyway, how did you continue borrowing it if already borrowed it once?
Well, we would eventually give it back to them.
It took you a minute.
Borrow it again.
I because your price point, Ryan, I do believe, what was your average price point per item? Like 30 some bucks?
Probably 35 or so. Like a standard mug is $36 now. It's going to be 38 this year, but yeah, 36 bucks.
And so
very attainable.
This was one thing that I thought was so real. Like, can I curse? I already have been cursing, so.
I've said a bunch of cuss words.
I just thought that was so fucking cool that you were able to make $95,000 selling pottery at that price point. Because I definitely had the mindset that I couldn't do that. Like, I 100% will own up to that. I did not believe that you could have $95,000, that you could make that amount of money making pottery that on average was 35 bucks. Like, and I
but you have to be fast.
Yes, you have to be fast. You have to be efficient. Those are not, I think I'm efficient. I like shit that takes a long time. I don't think I'm fast. I think that there are certain things within my art that are fast. Like, I'm sure, I mean, you two know, I slip cast, quite a bit. But the things that I, like, want to get back to this year are my hand building. And my hand building stuff, I mean, I have it dialed down pretty much, in my opinion, as efficient as it can be. So I feel good about that. Yes.
Have you bought a slab roller yet?
Oh, God, yeah. That was, like, I bought that shit in 2017.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering.
Oh, I love my slab roller. It's my baby.
For anybody out there who's looking for a slab roller, I am selling one.
It's not your standard slab roller. I was going to say stab roller. It's not a stab roller either, but it's not a typical slab roller.
Is it a tabletop one or what?
No, it's the high roller.
What is this?
It's a vertical slab roller.
Oh.
So it.
Shimpo slab
roller. Yeah. It's just, like, you can move it around. It's on wheels. And it's really great for space saving.
Sure.
So.
All right. Well, I hope you sell it.
It's a pretty bomb wheel. Thanks. I do, too.
I love my slab roller. I got my wheel in 2017 because I was very committed to being a wheel thrower. And then when I crossed over to the dark side, I got a slab roller in 2017. I had that in my living room. So not good for my lungs. Sorry. But yeah.
Been there.
Yeah. started from the bottom, okay? Slab roller was in my living room and my wheel was in my kitchen. And my apartment was kind of like, it was in a basement. so the floor was not level. So, like, from the kitchen to the living room, like, you actually would, like, slope down, like, significantly. So that was cool. Yeah, that apartment sucked so hard. And that's where I got started. Okay, where were we at? I'm totally
distracted. So you were saying you didn't think the average price point, $35, you could sell $95,000 worth.
So my standard Slipcast work, my mugs, basic with no like hand painting, are $65 a mug. And it doesn't matter if it's the 15-ounce, 18-ounce, or 22-ounce size. They're all the same price. Because at this point, this past year, this was the first year I did that, I wanted to find out what sold. So I wanted to take price out of the equation. So what did people prefer? Was it the 15-ounce, 18-ounce, or 22-ounce? I do have those stats. Looks like 15-ounce was the winner.
I feel like we could go down to, like, an 8-ounce, honestly.
Well, here's the thing. Okay.
Without adding too much complexity, okay. I don't know. Go ahead.
It is a possibility. I would have to find somebody to do the design work. So I am a designer. I do not do 3D modeling. Mm-hmm. I worked for a very popular, talented 3D modeler. but he is redesigning all of his stuff. So it's not like I can be like, hey, how about you add one of mine to the lineup? You know, like,
right.
It's just,
right.
Yeah, like, it worked while I worked for him, but it's time for me to, like, you know, fly the coop, leave the house, grow up. I don't know.
Right.
Whatever expression you want to say.
If the standard, and the standard mug you're talking about are the ones with the dimples on it, right? So that's
my bubble mug. Yes.
Your bubble mug. Okay.
Bubble mug.
I have a question. Yeah. So could you, I've always actually kind of wondered this, could you, like, since you're slip casting, could you slip cast one of your current mugs as, or just like the body or whatever?
I know exactly and then what you're going to go with. Yeah.
Fire it and move it down. Could you do that?
I'm using a 5-part mold. That's it.
What did you say?
Fuck that shit. Never
fire
mind.
Fire it and move it down.
My mold is 5 parts. So to do that process, Becca, it's just not. No.
Yeah, that's not realistic.
Really
I was saying, like, every time it got fired, it would shrink.
Which is true.
So then you could take a mold out of that one and then move it down and then take a mold and then move it down.
Yeah. I've got some people that I know that can do, that are more experienced in, like, Rhino, which is the 3D modeling program that Kurt uses. I, at this point in my artistic career, I'm not interested in learning 3D modeling. I am much more interested in the design. I'm much more interested in creating one physical copy to give to somebody who can do the 3D computer design.
Right. And you just pay them for the service of doing it?
100%. Pay them for what they're good at so that I can spend my time doing... Oh, sorry. My dog is coming in to say hi. Hey, Bubs. What's up? Hey, buddy. Yeah. I know, like, a lot of people have some hot takes on this, but, yeah, I would much rather do what I'm good at, pay somebody else to do what they're good at. And
oh, I'm 100% for that.
Yeah, I'm totally for that, too.
Yeah, like, I don't think it's any less of my design because I didn't do the computer work. Like, no, that's my design.
Yeah.
Like, I feel super confident about that.
Well, yeah, Yeah, I think the 8-ounce mug is like an option, but you know, is that a requirement for you to go to markets with an 8-ounce mug, or is it
the other thing?
No, are there other price points?
An 8-ounce mug. This is kind of the problem, right? So like clay isn't my expense in
the process is pretty much the same.
Yeah. So for an 8-ounce mug, process is completely the same. So then I'm kind of cutting myself short because mm-hmm. people are going to expect to no fault of their own an 8-ounce mug to be
cheaper. Be 45 than 65 yeah. or something.
When in reality, it's still taking me the same amount of time. And honestly, going smaller in size, probably more of a pain in the butt. Like, in terms of all of the, like, mold pieces and the fragility and, yeah.
Yeah, because I guess the alternative would be make a simpler form and then use, like, sprig molds or something to add to it. But then it's a different step to...
Well, and that's essentially what I've been doing with the candy collection. Right. Sort of, right? Like, I took away all the bubbles on the 15-ounce design to make it be a smooth surface, and now that's kind of where I'm spent. Like, that collection excites me quite a bit. It does definitely present its own different challenges, but, I mean, yeah, that's kind of...
That's kind of the alternative, but you're not really saving time that much.
No, because again, that's still a fun.
It's not decorative time, but it's like the handle adding clay time.
It's still a 5-part mold too.
Yeah. And it's a risk with breakage, like cracking and stuff like that. Yeah.
And the candy collection she's talking about is like it's pretty cool. It's like a bunch of little.
Brian's getting one.
Yeah, oh, yes? So there's there's like a gummy worm version, there's a candy, a bear, gummy bear gummy version. Bear.
Gummy bears, gummy worms, I've got hearts, I've got candies, and like
little wrapper candies.
Wrapper candies. Yeah. Right now that...
What about the jelly bean looking one? Is that...
Oh yeah, the jelly beans. I like the jelly beans. The gummy bears... Put them next to each other. I like the jelly bean ones just didn't move in comparison to the gummy bears. And I like the jelly beans, but you know, to each their own. Give the people what they want. So
yeah.
Which Ryan, we'll have to figure out what you want for your candy mug.
Oh.
What's your favorite candy? Do you have one?
Nerd clusters.
Ooh, I can make you a nerd clusters mug.
We what?
Can, yeah, hell yeah.
Oh my god.
So Ryan donated.
We can sell the shit out of Nern clusters mugs.
Ryan donated to the Kickstarter, and so that is the reward tier that he selected, was to get his very own custom candy mug.
Ooh, fancy pants.
I know. So yeah, if you want some Nern clusters, you just gotta say the word.
Nerd clusters, I want it.
Woohoo! Okay.
Oh my god, if you make nerd clusters, I'm sure we can help sell those. Seriously, though.
Okay, where are you, nerd clusters? Sponsor us. That would honestly, okay, I know I always joke about sponsorship because I think it's just funny to joke about, but like, Haribo, reach out because I eat so many of your gummies. Oh, the strawberries. I forgot about the strawberry gummies. I love those. Those, I think, are my favorite right now.
If they're the ones I'm thinking of, they're pretty good.
Should I show you? Can I show you? Hold on. I'm literally sitting next to my very own vintage candy machine. Hold on. Like, I love candy. Okay. Hold up.
I used to have a drawer next to my... Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but you don't have one that you can put your own quarters into.
No, I don't have one of those. We have one that's kind of like a rocket ship shape. It's plastic and it's got a hover sensor, so it'll...
Oh, hell yeah.
That's in our kitchen, so...
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. Yeah, I just think vintage candy... I don't... What are those? A candy machine? I don't even know what it's called.
Gumball machine.
Candy dispenser.
Gumball machine. Yeah, I want more. I have this one. This one's my peanut M&M one. But I would really like one for, like, maybe Skittles, maybe Mike and
I. A fruity candy. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think this is...
Could you make
issue.
A gumball vase? Like a gumball machine vase? So it kind of looks like a machine?
Oh, should. Look at you coming in with all the ideas. But I wouldn't be able to sell that for $35.
No. That would be That would be a top level.
So I took myself out of a lot of markets. To really circle back, I took myself out of a lot of markets because I felt like my prices were too expensive and I did not want to cheapen them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know what I want to make per hour, to be able to live the life that I live and also to be able to leave the restaurant industry. And I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing on my part for doing this or having this standard. I love that. But that's kind of what I did because I had an art show and I was like so proud of myself because it was like a 2-day show. It was so hot. And this is the last one I ever did. It was so hot. And 2-day show and I sold $1,000. And I was like, hell yeah, I did so good. And then I subtracted the $300 booth fee. So now we're at $700.
Mm-hmm.
And then I divided the time. And I think this was so long ago, but I'm going to pull out my calculator.
That sounds like one of my first art shows I did. It was a 2-day weekend, $200 booth fee. I had a shitty setup, but I sold $900 and I felt great.
I had a good setup. I did. Like my setup, I feel like good about, you know? But okay, so the setup was on a Friday. The show itself was Saturday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, and we're not going to count travel time. We're not going to count like me packing up my car,
right,
even though that is time. The show itself went from 10 to 5 both days. So that's, what is that, 14 hours? Yeah. And
10
then,
to 5 is 8, right?
Or setup was 7. 2, so that's 16. So 700 divided by 16, that's $43.75 an hour. Which is actually really good, but it was one of those situations where, like, I spent money on lunch and dinner both days, because that was, like, it was one of those shows where it was, like, you're so hot, and you're just, like, desperate to cool down.
Right.
It's like, you're, like, I'm on asphalt, and it's, I think, 90. So,
right.
Like, honestly, mm-hmm. the fact that I even was able to sell that amount of money, I feel like it's good. So, I mean, I guess that's still really good. I don't know why that was the show that, like, broke me, but for whatever reason, I actually...
Probably because you're fucking hot as shit.
Honestly, that's
why.
I was probably having a small heat stroke when I was making decisions afterwards or something. But, yeah, so, okay, I don't know. I feel like I'm, like, eating my words now. I'm not mad at making an hourly of $43.75 at a show like that.
Yeah.
I
mean, I think mentally.
Did you do the math in your head, or did you have that already?
She just pulled her phone out.
Oh, okay.
She was calculating it.
Absolutely not. I don't do mental math.
I was like, damn.
I don't know if it was a mental decision early on that I wasn't thinking of it at an hourly wage rate that. Specifically, I was just going into it. I want to get into shows. I have to go through this process of figuring out the customers. I have to build the customer base. It's going to take time. It's not going to mathematically make sense early on.
Right.
I get it. Not everybody has that luxury to make those sacrifices.
Yeah.
But I think you kind of have to put those, you got to put that time in and those, get those reps in of the shows and figuring out which shows you want, which ones you don't. You know, maybe doing a show in the middle of July is not enjoyable from a health standpoint and heat stroke standpoint. So maybe you just avoid shows in that time of year.
Sure.
Yeah,
or
I've had to make
find...
those decisions. And...
Right, yeah. No, I think, like, these type of conversations, they just, like, I feel like they're a brain massage for me. Like, I love them so much. I do definitely want to have some lower price point items, I think, for shows like that. But then it's weird to say that because, like, my candy mugs, I sell between $175 and $250 online, and they sell out, you know? So it's, like, it is kind of this weird like conundrum, I guess, where it's like, maybe I should make lower price pointed items for markets. But again, like, look, I'm doing it again. I'm literally pretty womaning myself already. Again, we never stopped.
I think you're thinking of, do I make lower price items? Because otherwise I'm not going to enjoy the markets and I'm not going to get the results I want out of the markets.
Sure.
But I think you should have an assortment of prices, but I think it's realistic to expect that the audience at a market is not the same audience that you would have for the people that might buy your stuff online. So they already know you. They know part of your process. They know how involved it is. They know how much work you put into the design work and choosing what decor choices or decoration choices you want to do on it. So, and those customers are probably more educated on the price point of like, okay, I'm willing to spend $65 on a mug.
100%.
But a customer that's never seen you before, expecting them to spend $65 on something that is already kind of a luxury purchase for them. They weren't planning on buying a mug that day, maybe, or they didn't even know you that day. Right. I think that's...
They stumbled upon the market that day. They didn't even know it was happening.
Yeah. I don't think that's realistic.
How saturated are the markets where you're at? Because here in Denver, it is disgustingly saturated.
There's a lot. But, yeah. I mean, I think that's a good thing for the... That's a good and a bad thing. For the artist, it's a good thing because there's many to choose from. There's no shortage of options. You can choose between a lot of different price points of booth fees you want to pay. You can choose between one-day shows, two-day shows. You can travel 40 minutes, and it's a different customer base than somewhere closer to you or whatever.
Right.
And then in a negative, there's a lot of shows on the same weekend. So if they're in a similar area, then certain shows are going to get most of the audience or more of an audience than others.
They have their own
group of customers as well. So like there's indie markets, like your stuff might fit better in like an indie market where the customer base is a little different than in a fine art show, but also you could do well in a fine art show.
Right.
So
price point is there.
Yeah. Right. But maybe an indie market, they might like your vibe and your styles, but maybe they're not willing to spend $65 on a mug, but they're willing to spend on a cute soap dish or a jewelry dish that's got some fun colors and fun designs to it.
Right.
And I don't know what the price point of that would be, but maybe that's right around $30 to $35. Yeah, so
the cloud trays are $35. But then like I was attempting to look at my numbers because I saw you had like, you know, items sold and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. I didn't have items sold. I had items made, pots thrown.
Oh, you had items made. Okay.
People were asking me about sold. I was going to actually pull up the sold thing from shows. I can pull it up as we're going too, because I was pulling up my 2023 show sales.
Do you use Shopify or what do you use?
I use Square.
Etsy. Oh. Square for shows, Etsy for...
Online, yeah.
Etsy for online.
But the thrown thing is just pen and paper. I just keep track on pen and paper of what I'm throwing.
Smart. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. I already know who I am. I want to, but this is not the year I'm going to. Maybe next year.
I just do it whenever I'm in the studio. Before I leave the studio, I jot down what I made, and I keep it month to month. And mug.
I mean, that is so cool.
You know, you just got to be disciplined about it, or else you're going to lose track. And
Ryan is a different human than you and I am.
See, like, I'm already stressing about me keeping track of that, even though I said I'm not going to do that. I'm stressed out right now because I'm like, well, what if they don't survive? Then you got to go back and then you got to.
I don't do that.
You
I
gotta
just
take out. Yeah. See?
Yeah. I just do the thrown version, but I do see it being valuable to count how many pieces you're actually selling. It would be way more valuable to say, how many did you throw and how many did you actually sell? But
true.
I think the takeaway for the pots thrown for people to see is you can make $95,000 of sales, but you see that I threw almost 4,000 pieces in the year.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I get some pieces were carryovers from previous years and all that stuff, and some of those are, you know, sold at half price because they're for wholesale.
Sure.
But you can see how many pieces I'm making and the breakdown of what pieces I'm making more
of. You kept your operating expenses really low.
That's because he has everything.
Right. Yeah,
we
I don't have
everything we need.
Yeah, and also the studio assistant was lower this year because we started doing a trade. We did a studio access trade, so yeah, that was significantly lower than last year because of that.
I'm excited because this is the first year since I mean, I've always wanted to do this full time. Again, I am by nature a bit chaotic, I think. Like, I'm organized-ish, but, like I'm organized for a chaotic human. But for an organized person, I'm chaotic, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, since making the bubble mugs design and really feeling that I identify super well with that as my work, like, that happened in 2020. So I kind of count like my artistic journey really getting more serious in 2020. Everything else before that, from 2016, 2017 to 2020, that was me still, I mean, I'm still figuring it out. Do we ever stop? I don't think so. But like, that was really me just like not gelling with the look of my work, but selling it because I knew it was good quality. And I knew that it was good work, but it was like, yeah, I don't feel like this is me. But now I feel like I have a line of work that I'm ultra passionate about and that I feel like is me. So, I mean, yeah, for 3 years, that's, well, I guess it's 2024 now, but like, I do feel like this is the first year because I actually am going to have my own kiln for the first time in 7 years. Like,
right.
I feel pretty great about that because doing the math, like, there were times when I was driving 40 minutes one way four times a week. So, it's like, that easily gets to be, like, an eight-hour workday.
Right, that's a lot.
I've spent between packing my car up, unpacking my car, driving. That's easily 8 hours a week that I essentially lost last year and the other 2 years. And I also had two jobs while mm-hmm. trying to get this off the ground.
Were you keeping track of your miles at least so you can deduct those from your?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
that's good.
I was.
So you probably drove way more than I did. And my driving is pretty much just from shows.
You need to get the app. You have the app? Okay.
Yeah, it's a matter of me remembering to put the app on.
Oh, okay, so I use the app Herdler.
Herd.
And it's H-U-R-D-L-R. H-U-R-D-L-R. And yeah. All you have to do is make sure the app is open in the background.
Yeah, that's what I don't do.
Like, well, it has to always be open? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it always has to be, like, and I get what you're saying on the background. I get weirded out by tracking shit, even though everybody's tracking me always. So it's a weird thing.
That's part of the reason I don't do it, just because I'm like.
I did because I drive a 4Runner. So it's like when you're doing that amount of driving in a big ass car, like, I want some money back for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
But, yeah. I do think I'll be able to be more efficient because I can be casting work while loading up a kiln. I can be casting work while glazing. Like, these are all things that I haven't been able to do for 3 years. So I am interested.
That's a big reason why I'm able to produce and do the things I do, because I don't have to leave the house literally.
Right. Yeah.
So I work from home. I have the studio here. I can walk pieces to the post office. I can pack an order.
Sure.
Take a break and pack an order.
Yeah.
And he does have a life. He does. Like, him and Rachel will go out on Saturdays and Sundays. They'll go up to his parents' house. Like,
yeah.
They go on trips. Like, he does have a life. And
it's just very selective.
How?
Usually what we'll do is we'll I'll see a comedy show that I want to go to or something, and I'll be like, hey, are you good for this date? And it's usually like 3 months out or 2 months out. And I'll be like, hey, are you fine with me buying tickets to this? And she's like, sure, whatever. I buy tickets, and I might do that 3 or 4 times. So there's probably a few of those events like that spread out over the year.
So are would you say you're making or throwing stuff every day?
No.
No. Because, again, I want this to be relatable for other people who are in our same positions. Because do you eventually want to do pottery full time or no?
Yes.
Yeah. Even though I know that your job, you do fairly well.
I do very well. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's fine. I do too. Like, as a bartender, where I bartend and the neighborhood I'm in, like, there are some nights where I'm like, this is silly. Like, I this doesn't make sense. Sometimes.
Wait, can I ask you how much your biggest payout was at the end of the night?
Oh gosh, I don't even like.
Or do you get random tips that people just give you $150 or something, like, or $100? I'm sure they just drop $100 or something. But
I mean, like a couple weeks ago, I also like to play a money manifesting game while I'm working, which I know a lot of people probably don't believe in, but that's okay. It helps.
Whatever gets you through the night, it don't matter.
I was just about to say, truly, it literally helps me get through my serving or bartending shift, so it's not hurting anybody. But I had one of these nights, and believe what you want to believe, but I got 3 $100 tips. And so, like, the one table, I think their tab was, like, $200, $250. They left me a $100 tip. Another table, their tab was $300, and this guy felt so bad because his in-laws were so terrible to me, and they were a lot to deal with, but they were just grandparents, they were just old, you know, but he was, like, so embarrassed by their behavior that he gave me, so their tab was, like, $340, he gave me a $120 tip because he just
bless
was, like,
that man, bless
seriously.
Him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bless,
like,
him for the end of the days.
It was just a wild night where, like, that just didn't, like, it didn't make sense. But.
I have a question.
Wait, how much did you walk home with? Wait, just straight dollars.
Oh, yeah,
how much did you walk home with?
That night, I think I walked home with $540, and I worked.
Damn.
I probably worked, like, maybe 7 hours. I don't even think. We'll call it 7. So I walked out with $540 in cash, 7 hours of work, and that's not even including what I make, what my hourly rate is.
And it's above minimum wage, right? Your hourly rate?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is because I never get, like,
you don't get like a $2 thing and then you get the tips. You're not paid that way. You're paid an hourly wage.
I don't ever get a paycheck because what I make per hour just goes directly to taxes based off of what I make. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I, like, sometimes I'll see a 37-cent paycheck. Like,
And it's like,
that's, like, rare. So, like, usually the paycheck that I, like, the hourly rate that I get paid from the restaurant, that just all goes to federal and state taxes. I never see that
but
paycheck.
You're not...
And then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're not, like, getting paid $2 like the way that they some places do.
No, yeah. I have no idea. I have no idea what I am getting, but I'm not getting $2. I know that. But also, like, that night, like, it was also, like, right before Christmas. So I like to point out probably a fluke, or not probably, but, like, holidays are weird. You can either get very generous tippers, because a lot of times these people are like, yep, you're dealing with my crazy ass family and you're handling it better than I am, so I'm going to tip you accordingly.
Right.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Thank you for being here on Christmas Eve. Like, you know, you do get that. That is, like, true. But then you also get a lot of people who have never, like, who only go out once a year and they don't know what to tip and they don't. Yeah. So it's like,
that was something I was going to ask. How common is it to get basic, I want to say stiff, but basically, like, not even 15%. Like, is it regular and is it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
100%. Yeah. I used to, like, under my breath be like, well, and I curse you too. Like, thanks for that. And that sucks because when a table stiffs you, you essentially just paid for them to eat there and take up your seat. So say a four people sit down and they stiff you. So they leave you $0 or they leave you $2. Sometimes that'll happen and you're like, why did you even leave me the $2 on your $100 bill? Like, now I'm just even more hurt.
Right.
But yeah,
because you made a conscious effort to put the two.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, ouch. Like, I can't even justify, like, oh, maybe they forgot. It's like, nope. They wanted to give me $2. I paid for them to eat there because I have to tip out my back server. I have to tip out my bar team if the table ordered drinks. And I have to tip out my food runner. So whether or not I get tipped doesn't mean shit. Like, if I don't get tipped from that table, then the tips that I got from three other tables, they're going to go and pay for everybody else. Like, I still have to tip out.
So your tip and the way it works is at the end of the night, it's a percentage of your total tips for the whole night.
Yes. No, it's not based off of what I tip out is not based off of what my tips are. So for example, say my total sales for the night are $1,000. Okay. So for $1,000 night, I give my back server $20.
And is that $1,000 including the tips that people did leave, or is that before tips at all?
No, that's just the sale. That's just the cost of food and alcohol, what I sold.
Okay.
That's what I sold. Has nothing to do what people have given me. So what I sold, if I sold $1,000, then I give my back server $20. Say, we'll just keep it really easy. Say $900 of that $1,000 was food sales. So that $900 was food. Then I give my food runner $9. So I give them 10%. And then the bar team gets 5% of alcohol sales. So that's what? What's 5% of 100? Is that 5?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Somebody? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I, off of $1,000 of sales, regardless of what I've made in tips. So hopefully if I make 20% minimum, that's $200 in tips. And I tip out
$34.
Thank you. So I've tipped out $34. And then if I want to eat something at the restaurant, then I got to pay for that too.
But the thousand, the company has collected the thousand, right?
Yeah.
So your business collects it. And then it goes to them $34.
Goes to the three other people.
How much do you get of the thousand? Your salary, basically? You get the difference.
$176.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just a total crapshoot. And again, that's like best case scenario that everybody is leaving me 20%. So if somebody stiffs me, well, then she's not walking out with $176. She could be walking out with $150 instead. Like, the what I give to the bar team, the food runner, the back server has nothing to do with what the guest gives me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because
their livelihood is not going to be affected by shitty people leaving me a $0 tip, unfortunately.
Right, they deserve a certain amount. Right.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And it sucks because you are the only face that they're interacting with generally, mm-hmm. so you have a lot of pressure on you to help them.
Mm-hmm.
Behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
like, you're influencing how much they're going to get, too, so.
Yeah. Yup.
Can I
a lot of it's out of your control.
Hey, guys. So, we are cutting this episode short this week because it ended up being, like, 3 hours long. And so we figured making it 2 episodes might just be easier for everybody involved. There's a baby in the background. Anyway, so come back next week, and we will have the rest of this video, or no, podcast. My bad. And yeah, that's it. It's all chaos in this house because there's two children here. So anyway, have a great week. And we'll see ya. We won't see you next week, but we'll be there next week. Okay, bye.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to another episode of Wheel Talk. This podcast is made possible through the contributions of all of our listeners who always ask us great questions, leave us reviews, and contact with us through social media. Thanks to all the fellow makers as well who take time to be interviewed and share about their lives and businesses.
And thank you to Ashley from Boldover Ceramics and Lindy from Lindy Garner Ceramics for their assistance on the Wheel Talk podcast Instagram. You are invaluable. Thank you to everybody.